Sled Dog Podcast, Episode 7, Interview with Becky Himes. Hi, and welcome to the Sled Dog Podcast. This is Tim.
And this is Gina. And this is the podcast that teaches, tantalizes, and helps you transition into dog sledding.
Okay, I gotta ask, why the three T's today?
Because this is all about transitioning. Our next interview is going to talk about how Becky Himes transitioned from sprint to mid-distance to longer-distance races.
Today's going to be a very interesting interview. We've got Becky Himes, who runs long-distance races like the Bear Grease and the Can-Am in Maine. And she is just a wonderful friend of ours. She helped us get into dog sledding. And when we were looking for someone to help us understand how to transition from sprint into mid-distance into long-distance, we thought to ourselves, well, who better to call but to bug Becky herself? So we brought Becky up here. We're not too far away, and her wonderful husband, Phil, decided to stop by and let us interview him. So after Becky's interview, we'll be having a Dr. Tim vet tip. Tim is a wonderful guy. I can tell you, we got to meet him face-to-face yesterday at the Mid-Union Sled Haulers meetings in Michigan, which is our MUSH organization for the Michigan area. Fantastic gentleman, helping and volunteering to help out so many people with different shots and different training courses, constantly sharing knowledge with us. I can't tell you how much I appreciate the guy. So if you haven't had a chance to go out to his site, please do. Go out to drtims.com and check out his articles, his information, and also his dog food. Today's conversation with him is going to be focused on
old dog care.
Old dog care. So yeah, what do you do with your older dogs, and how do you watch over them?
Yep, and we got one of those, and that happens to be Shoney, who is what our stories are about.
Yes, Shoney's getting older. We're debating this year whether to let her run or not. And, you know, it's probably one of those biggest challenges that people have is that you have a wonderful dog, very active, very vigorous, loves to run around the kennel, does just a wonderful job with the kids, and just loves you when you go out there. And when you hook up the sleds, or in this time of year, we're hooking up our carts and getting ready to run, boy, she really wants to go. And you just tell yourself, should I hook her up? Should I not hook her up? Because you don't want her to get hurt and just be miserable. But at the same point, they live to run.
Right. So, and she has been having cramping on the trail. So it's kind of tough when she has to stop and she starts yelping. So it's really best for her to stay back in the kennel.
Yeah.
But she's not happy about that.
No, I'm not either. Yeah, we miss her and so forth. So right before we get to the interview, I want to do a shout-out and say thank you so much for the wonderful feedback we're getting. We have a few wonderful comments from folks, and we want to say thank you so much. From Leslie, who just moved to Alaska last year. Dory, also from Alaska. I want to say thank you for Christian from SledDogging.com, and also Tara
from Zeeland, Michigan.
From Zeeland, Michigan. So thank you guys so much. And again, thank you, Dr. Tim. So let's get on to the interview. So Becky, why don't you start off by telling us, how long have you been in mushing? How did you get started?
I got a Siberian, like everyone. I got my first Siberian in the spring of 1993.
Oh, great.
And started ski touring with him that winter.
Just the one dog?
One dog. Well, that wasn't enough, so I got another Siberian that winter, which he was just a pup, so he didn't do anything that year. The next year, I ski-jured with them right off the bat, but then I had to have a sled. Got a sled, and it just kept going from there.
Now, you got a sled. Did you have any mentors, or did you hear about a mushing club, or how did that start?
Before I got my first sled, and at that point, I hadn't met anybody else. I bought my sled from Tundra Outfitters, which was in Mackinac City at the time, and then they had a place. Their main base was in Nunica, down by Grand Rapids. Hmm. And it was an all-white fiberglass sled.
Oh, that's the all-plastic one?
Yeah. Okay. There's no wood on it anywhere, and except for the brake. It had a little cheesy brake. I had to get a bigger brake because I hit things a lot. And so that winter, I met some people from Baldwin that my parents had taken a dance class with, and they knew about the race in Baldwin, and hey, come over to that. And so that winter, which would have been in 94, That was my first race, was in Baldwin.
Two Siberians.
Two dogs.
And how'd you do?
We finished. We finished. There were no fights involved. It was good.
That's awesome. And that sled was like super heavy. So
it was very heavy. I didn't know that at the time. I didn't know any of that. As a matter of fact, I got the rules. That was a mush race. I got the rules just the week before. I didn't know what a sled bag was.
Okay.
This was, pre-internet.
Right.
So I called on Monday to Tundra Outfitters in Unica and asked them to send me a sled bag, not knowing what it was. And I got it Friday night in the mail.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I could race on Saturday.
Wow.
Didn't know how to put it in.
So that was your first medal, your first win?
No, we didn't win. Oh, no, we didn't win.
Two-dog in a three-dog race.
But it was pretty good. It was fun. We had a great time. And actually, I think that race, I ski-jured as well with Stoney, with the first dog.
So then what happened after then?
Well, then I decided, there was an ad in the paper. Somebody was looking for a Siberian stud. So Stoney, in the summer, I thought I'd take him to obedience school because that would work really well if a dog would listen. But it didn't work very well. He almost flunked. Because you don't want him to teach. You want him to pull, and
right.
They're like, no, they can't pull. Anyways, in that class, he met his girlfriend, and we had a litter of pups, and I just had to have one. I couldn't take the money.
Right.
So Chance came home with us, and then I had three. Well, then I needed another one because three just wasn't fast enough, so.
You gotta get four.
And then that one had a brother that nobody else was taking, so that was number five. And then I had five boys, and I needed a female. That was number six.
That was great.
Those were all Siberians. And then I took a trip to Alaska.
Oh, you went to Alaska.
Yeah.
To get a dog or to go for
no,
visit?
To go and watch. I did a rod.
What year was that?
98, March. But I went on that tour with Tundra Outfitters. And Cheryl Cheadle. Cheryl was the owner. And Mom and I went up there, and I went, wow, this is pretty cool. I could go farther than 5 miles. And came back from that trip, and that day I hooked up all my little Siberians and went like 13 miles and just thought, that was
it.
Oh, yeah.
So that was
that was like a whole day's worth for a bunch of Siberians to go.
That was the second or third year, or was that?
No, that would have been, that was in 98, so like five winters later.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. During that time in between, ran around the state with the Mush Club, doing races, the three dog and the five dog, and ski touring and having fun. Which was really nice.
Now, your brother runs also. Was he running at the same time as you, or is he not into it yet?
No, he wasn't into it yet.
Okay.
So I went in March of 98 up to Iditarod, and then I went back that August. And I went up there for a couple weeks by myself and traveled around some kennels and came back with five dogs.
How'd you get them home?
Flew them.
Okay.
At that point, it was only $50 a dog.
Oh,
okay.
Now it's like $275 or something.
Some crazy amount.
Yeah, it changed in the interim from the time that I went up and got those dogs, and then 3 years later, my brother went up and got three dogs, and he had to pay that.
Yeah, they realized they could start making
crazy
money
price.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they just all flew back with me. It's pretty fun.
Wow. Now, did you intend to come back with five dogs, or did you have a
I
number
had a
in your head?
Plan of three. I just made a couple trips and got five.
Right.
That's what it amounted
right.
to. I couldn't help it.
Right, for sure.
Just too fun. And then that winter, while I was running them, I crashed and hurt my ribs pretty bad. And then my brother was running them for me while I was hurt. And now that's how he got stuck. Yeah.
Okay, so basically the beginning of your career was strictly sprint racing.
Yep.
Okay. And so the advent of the Alaskan dogs coming from Alaska.
Yep.
Did that begin the mid-distance or were you still
that
sprinting?
That winter I started out then going into the 40 and 60 mile races.
Wow. Okay.
That winter.
Okay. And so how did that change before you crashed, of course. Oh, how did that change your whole kennel?
Oh, everything changed from there. Not that I didn't pay attention to what they were eating when we were running sprints, but it's more of a science when you're really paying attention to, you know, they're not just running 3 miles and coming back and eating. It's and I didn't know what I was doing. I was just flying by the seat of my pants completely and reading books that I could. But at that point, there wasn't a lot of other people around here that had dogs. And like I say, the internet wasn't in existence.
Was Mushing Magazine out at that point, or is it?
Mushing Magazine was out.
That's probably the only resource, really.
The Sled Hauler magazine,
their
little news flyer, and Team and Trail was out at that point. Bought a dog trailer from a lady named Ann Jandernoah down by Paw Paw. And she told me about Mushing Magazine, gave me all her old ones, came out of there with.
Right.
We had someone that did that for us.
Yeah, exactly. So came out of there with a
dog trailer and tons of magazines.
Yeah. And I had the trailer, and I always had the trailer with the sprint dogs. But then when we started going more into the distance, it was more difficult with the trailer, trying to get around and in parking lots and stuff. And that's when we switched to dog box on the truck.
Okay. How many dogs could you carry then?
In that trailer? Oh, it was a big trailer.
Okay. No, in the box. So when you went to your races, how many did you usually travel with?
Eight.
Eight, okay. So
when we were doing like the 40 and 60 mile races.
With eight dogs?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my goodness, that's great.
Yeah, a lot of them were six dogs. So.
Okay, so your food changed, your dog food trailer changed.
Sled changed.
Well, we got to get rid of the sled.
Yeah,
for sure.
The plastic sled is gone.
Plastic sled was gone. Called up Clyde Risden for the first time and started talking to him about sleds, and he hooked me up with a Pro Tracker, which is a sprint sled. It's really light, doesn't have a basket in it kind of thing. It has a piece of board that goes underneath the basket so the dog can ride in or underneath the sled bag. So it's solid for the dog to sit on, but there's not the extra weight.
Oh, nice.
So I got that sled from him and started running these mid-distance races with that sled, which was perfect for 40 miles. Yeah. I could carry everything that I needed with that. But then, you know... You're running 60. How about 80 or 100? Why not? So back to Alaska and brought back a couple more dogs and started going a little further. And at that point, then my brother started racing too. And I had three litters of Alaskans. Hmm. And Mike got a sled from Clyde that was a little bit bigger than mine. Worked really well. And
he's
then,
a little bigger guy.
Little bigger guy, yeah. And actually, I like that one better now. It's the handlebar is 3 inches higher, and it's 1.5 inches wider than a standard sled.
That's nice.
It is. It's really comfortable, actually, to ride.
Not a lot of bending over. You're just kind of okay.
So how did your training change?
Obviously,
you were running Siberians 3 miles in and 3 miles home, or 1.5 miles out and 1.5 miles at that. That was your sprint days.
Yeah.
So how did you start training for 40 miles, then 60 miles, then 100 miles?
Well, I wasn't married, and so when August hit, I would get up in the middle of the night and run when it was really cool, or as cool as it would get at that point, and just start training a few miles at a time. But in that 4 or 5 year period, I never started training after middle of August, just because I was up at 4 or 2 or whenever I happened to wake up, I'd go out and run dogs. We'd still start out the same, and we'd still start out with just like 2.5 miles and do that for a few days and then go to 5 miles and do that and keep growing. But that again was a big learning curve for me because I didn't really know how to do it. I wasn't sure. I was just reading everything I could get my hands on and hoping that I wasn't ruining anybody.
Right. Yeah. Obviously, you must have had to buy a dry land cart of some form.
Four-wheeler. I bought a cart from Tundra that they had acquired from somebody else. And I thought that was just going to be the coolest thing, this three-wheeled cart. And I hooked up three dogs to it. I didn't make it 200 yards, and I crashed harder than I have ever crashed, and I never hooked dogs up to it again.
I can't.
Sold it, and it went away.
I told Tim, we're not getting a cart for the girls. There's no way. I'm like, we're not sticking our girls on one of those carts. Sorry.
You know, Mr. Cheadle told me that I had hooked it up wrong, and I may have. I don't know. I just know the dogs went one way, the cart went the other, and I went flying.
Wow.
And my dad was like, wow. Well, that was bad.
Nobody was with you, right?
No, he was just watching.
Yeah.
Because he was still up at my house, he could see me because I didn't make it around the curve.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, so I sold
off
that.
Off to the quad dealership
it you went. Away, yep, got a quad, which is what I had used before when I originally started with the Siberians. But, you know, I just heard people talking about these carts, and it would be better. They'd be pulling more weight than if I was driving the quad and this and that. So I thought I'd try it, and I tried it. It didn't work well for me. Quad works better. I like the brakes.
Yeah, but. Let me skip back to the Siberians. Did the Siberians ever make it to the 20-mile, 40-mile
no,
races?
No.
They never got past the 5 miles?
No, I didn't. You know, and that was not the fault of the dogs. That was my fault because I didn't know how to train them. And not that I do now, but if they wanted to stop and roll in the snow or pee on the tree, okay.
You were good for that.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
So did you find the Alaskans, they just were more focused and would go?
Yeah.
They wouldn't want to stop.
They wouldn't want to stop. Okay. Or if you told them, you know, on by, they kept going on by, which I didn't know all those terms and stuff. So it wasn't the dog's fault.
Right.
Totally my fault. Siberians are so smart.
Right. Right.
They know you.
yeah, you know, and I had raised them all from pups and...
Okay.
They know what they can get away with.
So gradually with the quad, starting mid-August, you get them going a little bit at first and then more and more and more, more and more and more.
And
you're working a full-time job at this time?
Yeah. Yep. Yes. Okay. I was at that point doing every other day, which seemed reasonable to me. And now we do it a little different. A lot of times it's every other day, but we try and double up some days and give a couple days off kind of thing. But I was very much... every other day. There was not going to be a day that was missed. It doesn't matter if it's 20 degrees and pouring down rain, we're going. Which you do see at in the end result, it does make a difference in the dogs, you know. But and most of my training is at night because I work during the day. That is something in my first night races that I noticed was a huge benefit because so many people don't train in the dark and all of a sudden it's
freaking out.
Yeah. They don't know how to work their headlamp, or they're uncomfortable with it because they can only see a little bit, or they're not.
Their dogs aren't used to it either.
I have different spots on the gang line and on their harnesses where there's reflective tape, so I know what's where. And if you're not used to running at night, you just don't necessarily do that stuff. So it was a big you have to ride the sled because you can't see the bumps coming. So you learn balance. At least for me, anyways, I learned to drive the sled a little better, or else.
Okay.
Crash hard.
You don't even think about that. You know, is what you can't see in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
You think, well, the dogs are, you know, they're going to see in the dark, so that should be fine. But you forget about the fact that you're hitting bumps and, you know, watching out for this and trying to see stuff at the last
tree branches.
Yeah. Swack.
Mm-hmm. Things like that. That changed. My gang lines changed. The tug lines.
The style of them longer. Or the length of them? Okay.
Made them longer. Made the neck lines a little bit longer. Just so they weren't quite so bunched. Although now we've switched back even a little bit and switched harnesses, and now we're using the CV harness, and they're really short. Mm. But the necklines are a lot longer, and they can reach out and grab snow if they want to, or that kind of thing. So we've kind of made full circle on that. In the beginning, I was making all my own lines. Well, probably, for the first 5 years, I was making my own lines. But then as you get into the mid-distance races, you have to have a cable core in most races. And I didn't know how to do that. So then I started buying after that.
So when you switched to the more mid-distance, can you think of your most successful race, your most successful year, and why it was so?
my most successful race would have been the Grand Portage race, which they don't have that race anymore, and it was a really good one too. I think that was in 2000. I'm pretty sure it was in 2000. That was 120, 115 miles, right around there, and started in Thunder Bay, on Canada, and you go down through the wilderness and end up in Grand Portage, Minnesota. Okay. And it was fun. It was great. And it was an 8-dog race. We came in fourth, but it was fourth behind the big guys.
Okay.
It was
right.
So you're like first of the amateur kind of thing?
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah, it was really cool. It was definitely big guys in front of us. And I have the back of the Mushing magazine. It was a casino out there that ran that race. Mm-hmm. And they took out the back page as an ad of that year's race.
Right.
And they had the top four actually listed. And there's like, you know, Swingley and all these guys. And then in fourth place in the 8-dog is me from Luther. It's just like, because that's the only time that fourth place has never really stunk, because that's all they did was list four.
Right.
And nobody else from that. So I actually have that in my office.
Yeah.
On the wall.
Oh, that's cool.
And hope it never fades, because that's
your claim to fame.
That was a really nice race. And you started in the evening, like 3 or 4 o'clock, and you run the rivers a lot.
Oh.
And I kept waiting, and they warned us in the driver's meeting that there were a lot of moose on the trails. But because we were crossing the border, you couldn't carry a gun, and we're in the driver's meeting, and they're telling us how to kill a moose if we have to. And
you don't have a gun.
No.
And that's how they're telling you to kill
you. You're taking your axe and you just make one really good shot between the eyes. And I'm like, oh, yeah. I can do this, sure. Okay, great, whatever. And
did
your brother run this race?
No, he did not.
So bro's not even out there to back
you up. No, he was handling for me. There were a couple points where you would cross through and not necessarily have to sign in or anything, but they were keeping track of you. But then the first checkpoint, I don't know what time I did get in there. Close to midnight, I don't know. They showed us a map, and you went on one end of the lake, and you went off on the other end of the lake. And it was, you were following a snowmobile trail. And at that point, we did a lot of snowmobiling, so didn't think much of it at the time. And we're going across this lake, and I know I'm like 4 miles from the checkpoint, and then having a good time. And all of a sudden, the dog just made a complete 90-degree to the right. And I called them back, and they sort of stopped and looked at me, and I called them back again, because in my head I'm thinking a snowmobile trail is not going to do that. There weren't any markers
right,
or anything, but a snowmobile trail wouldn't do that. So I call them back, and they come back around. Thank goodness, Sweetie and Blitzen are really good leaders, and we keep tooling along. Well, come to find out, there were about 6 teams that were in front of me, and
one of them turned. Or
several of them had turned. We came into the checkpoint. Well, there must have been more teams than that, because we came into the checkpoint in fifth. And there were several teams that were just going back and forth on the lake. They couldn't
trying to get off.
Find anybody. Yeah. And Linda Hart from Minnesota. I can't remember if the man was out in his yard or she went up and knocked on the window, or somehow this man helps her get back across.
Well,
pointed her in the right direction, and then the other teams followed her tracks back.
Why do you think they all hooked her up?
I don't know.
I don't know.
And the only reason I would have followed them too, because there were definitely tracks
right,
going that way, and the dogs just smelled them and were following them. But because of the snowmobile trail, you know, point A, point B. Choo, so.
Well,
wow. But we came in fifth.
So that was
no mood. Well, no. And then I left at about 2:30 in the morning out of that checkpoint. There were moose tracks all over the trail. And they actually gave us little pins at the driver's meeting that had a moose with a circle with a line through it that everybody it was crazy. And I kept
like
saying
that was
to the
gonna
dogs,
ward them off
you
or
guys
what?
Know what the moose like, look for the moose, sweetie, where's the moose, sweetie? And I never saw it. It was just the most awesome night. The northern lights were just crazy that night, and it was cold, and it was just really, really fun. And got to I passed the team that was in fourth about a mile out of the checkpoint. And I never saw anybody the rest of the night. it was starting to get daylight, and we went across this cutover, and we're swerving in and out. I looked behind me, and I could see four headlights coming through this cut. Whoa!
Come on, guys.
Then I started, in which they were a long ways away, but still, you see these lights coming, and you panic. Ended up getting to the checkpoint about 7:30, and nobody's there, and none of my family there.
This is the final check? This is it?
Yeah, that was the finish line. Yeah, yeah, my greatest race ever, and nobody's there. What had happened, there were two other teams that had run the race before, and so my family had, they were traveling with them.
Oh,
because they knew the roads, and it so happened that those two teams were way far in the back, so they waited for them at the checkpoint.
Okay.
And then they got to the border crossing, and there was one man at the border crossing, and it just took
forever.
Yeah, so
they had no idea that you'd be coming in fourth.
No, like no, they thought I was gonna crash.
20.
Yeah, yeah, they had no idea. So then one of the guys at the race, oh, you can hook off to my truck. Okay, that'd be great. That'd be really good. And then they came tooling around about 20 minutes later, but they were kind of like, you're done?
It's over.
Yeah. We are.
So do you, did most of your mid-distant races at that point, just they were basically straight racing through, you didn't spend the night over or
right.
stop? No.
Mm-hmm. Longest, you know, that was probably the longest break. I think it was, my times are messed up, but I think there was a mandatory, I don't know if it was 3 or 4 hour.
Okay.
Kind of a rest thing.
Okay, so how did you prepare yourself to go from like 5 dogs to 8 dogs to more dogs? Did you just do that one at a time? I mean, you just hooked up 8 dogs and said, let's see if I can do it.
Yeah.
I
had 5 Siberians.
Right.
And then, of course, in the meantime, in between there, I had a couple dogs that people had dropped off. And, oh, he'd be a great sled dog. He runs really fast and pulls. And I'd say, okay. And take him, and they wouldn't do anything. And, yeah. So, yeah, I just hooked them up. And the first time I hooked up those 5 new dogs from Alaska, I made it about a mile and had a brawl. Just a really bad brawl.
Bloody or just...
That particular dog, driver jumped Batman, and he was not a rip and tear kind of a dog. He was a grab you by the throat like a pit bull kind of thing and not move. Yeah, and I can...
And so as a woman, do you get in the middle of dogs?
Yep. 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 Don't take your gloves off. Don't take your gloves off. You don't have a choice, but you learn what you need to do in a hurry. That's for sure. Unhook as many lines as you can and get them, worry about catching them later.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think what else.
So you had the 5 and then, so obviously the speed of those 5 were dramatically different than the speed of the 5 Siberians.
Not at the get-go, but they definitely held it longer.
Okay.
You know, they all take off really fast, but then the Alaskans held it at a nice,
steady
even
race.
Trot,
okay.
Where the Alaskans went, oof, I'm tired, and laid down.
I'm done.
Or, I mean, the Siberians.
Okay, yeah. So throwing a 6 on, and then a 7th, and then an 8th. Or did you just...
When I started on the sled, I would either put, depending if it was fluffy snow or icy snow, I would put 1 or 2 bags of dog food in the basket.
Oh, good idea.
I tried, one time when I went to Alaska, I saw a guy he had 14 dogs on, and he had a tire behind him, and I tried to do that with just my 8, and they couldn't pull it. It was really, tire is really heavy in the snow. It doesn't, think it would be that heavy, but yeah, they couldn't do it. So dog food in the basket.
Okay.
Did the trick.
Slowed it down enough so that you could handle it and then get used to it.
Yes.
So while we're on dog food, I wanted to ask you, so tell us about your dog food adventures. You know, from what you started with the Siberians and then you switched, you probably had 10 times to get where you're at now.
Started off with my first dogs with Pedigree and canned, dry and canned.
Gosh. Don't worry about the names, but just each time
a brand that Tundra was selling that was made in Michigan and just went out of business last year, can't remember. And then to Yukonuba, and I used Yukonuba for a lot of years.
And that did the trick for you? Your dogs ran great?
And I was using the Yukonuba Premium Performance during that 100-mile race and beyond that, I used it. And then I switched another time. Then I used Redpaw for about a year and a half. And then we switched to Nutrisource. This is going on our third. This will be our third winter with the Nutrisource.
Awesome. There's a big difference to you? Or you just kind of...
There's a big difference in price between Eukanuba and the Nutrisource, but...
Positive or negative?
Positive. Well, it's cheaper.
Eukanuba is a lot more expensive. Yes.
Okay.
But I don't feel like we lost anything when we switched foods. Matter of fact, their stools are firmer. On the food that we have now, I could count on one hand how many dogs that I've had that have ever had diarrhea. And that would, I'd have a couple fingers left over. The foods have improved so much over the last 14 years.
We've heard that in many interviews.
It's just amazing how much it and changed and improved. But they still like their biscuits.
Right.
You know, right. I have had three dogs twist their stomach. And, you know, we've tried different things of how we feed them, when we feed them, and nothing yet is. It's just been bad luck.
Right.
Whereas, so.
So now tell us about your handler. You have a wonderful handler.
My handler grew up in Los Angeles.
Yes.
He had a dog once. Yes.
We also have the handler with us. His name is Phil. Phil Himes, and he is a wonderful gentleman. He's more than just a handler now, so tell us about that.
Phil and I met in August of 2000. That was my best year.
Year did you learn in the camp?
Yeah, 2001, and sorry.
Upon meeting him right away, did you tell him how many children, I mean dogs, were at your home?
I did. He was most impressed. I met him at a wedding of mutual friends, and when he initially found out that I drove myself there in a truck, he was a little taken back by that. And then the more we talked throughout the evening, I would say something, and then he would yell across the room, "Did you know she had that many dogs?" Or, "Do you know what she does in the winter?" And, so that was in August, and he was living in Chicago at that point. Came up and started training puppies a couple weeks later.
Nice.
Had never drove a snowmobile, and now it's pretty rare that I go out on a training run without him. He's always on the snowmobile.
Can you imagine, I mean, before you had someone riding with you or kind of protecting you, taking care of you, I mean, what you did when you were single?
I did a lot better at the races.
With training, or does that have to do with...
It has to do with, I'm not... When I was single, it was no big deal to be out there at 2 in the morning.
Yeah. Right.
It made a difference. And then along comes Sydney, who is now 3, and that's a really big difference in training. And not that training's not fun, and not that the races aren't fun, but she's a lot more fun.
Yeah, and it's a different season.
To watch her with the dogs is amazing. So we've kind of gone backwards a little bit after... A couple years after the Grand Portage race, then I ran the UP 200. We did really well that year. That year there was no snow. Well, about 10 miles of the 200 miles had snow. The rest was...
And what's doing really well?
Ice. We came in 10th out of 34, I think it was. That was my first longer race as far as, 200 miles.
And that's a straight-through race. You're not stopping.
Well, you have mandatory rest. Okay. You have mandatory checkpoints. We went from Marquette to Chatham. We tried to stay in Chatham for 3 hours, and the dogs just would not settle down. It was not happening for us at all. So we left Chatham and went down to Rapid River. And that year, there was just no ice on the bay. So normally you would run across... Not normally, they changed the route now, but from Rapid River, we used to run over to Escanaba across the bay, but that year there was no ice, so we stopped in Rapid River, and then we had to truck over to Escanaba, and I think we were there 7 hours? No. Pretty close to that. And then from Escanaba up to Gwin was almost 100 miles, and there was nothing in between.
Just
literally.
Just one straight shot.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, one
so
straight
you mushed
shot.
For like 100 miles. Just. Mm-hmm. So, and, is that fun?
It was fun.
What do you do in your head for 100 miles?
Oh, sing a lot of songs, and this was pre-iPod, too, you know? So talk to the dogs a lot. And actually, that whole time, I only saw two other teams.
Okay.
And that was in the first hour after I left Eskenazi. I never saw anybody else. So they had talked about this river party that was happening where you have to cross the river a ways up. And I got there maybe 10, 11 o'clock at night. And all of a sudden, there's just like 150 people that you come out onto this river. And there's generators and lights. And they're having this big party and hooping and hollering.
It's like Anchorage.
Oh, it's just fun. And so I stopped and they gave me a donut and they gave me hot chocolate. And the kids were playing with the dogs. And I'm hanging out. And this one man said to me, "This was really nice. You stopped." And I said, "Well, this is fun." And he said, "Nobody else has stopped."
Oh.
And I went, "Oh,
race.
I gotta go." No idea at all. I was just having so much fun. It was great.
You should ask her, could she try a little harder?
I could have tried harder, but it was, you know, and the dogs were loving it. They were getting hugs from all these kids. Yeah. And so anyways, I got into Gwyn and I was really tired. It was 3 a.m. and it was cold and I had froze my eye and couldn't see. And I said, you know what? You had a mandatory 4-hour. From Gwyn into Marquette, it's like 30 miles. You had a mandatory 4-hour rest, and I got off the sled and said to those guys, you know what? I'm staying here 6 or 7 hours. I'm tired. I'm not doing this. And they all said, no, you're not, because you're doing really good. So fed the dogs, crawled in the truck, laid down in the back seat. I'm really bad at eating and drinking on the trail. It's very hard for me to do. And I tried to eat some soup. It makes me not feel good when I eat out on the trail. So,
except for a donut in the middle of the night.
I know, you know, that was like a, they call it the River People Party. It was fun. And so they woke me up. I ended up leaving one dog there. I left Cal there. They woke me up and said, come on, it's time to go. And I, no, I don't want to go. And they literally had my boots sitting up right outside the truck door. I slid out and put my feet in and over to the sled. I'm, okay, fine. And we got the dogs to the line and they just started going nuts.
Excited.
They were just barking and jumping and carrying on, just freaking out. Okay. And then as I left, the sun was just coming up. So it was pretty fun. That was a good time. That was lots of fun.
You slept more than we did.
Yeah. That's a really tough thing. I took off out of there saying, you know, I'll see you in 10 hours on the other end of the trail. And they have to wonder what's happening. Where are they?
No handheld, GPS, anything. No.
Nothing.
Nope. Yeah. Nope. Very different. Very, very different. And you think like when, you know, you were running sprint races that were over with, you're back. Then these longer races, the help that you need completely changes as well.
Completely.
So what if you didn't have this husband or parents? Well, I mean, what would you have done if you were just a single person wanting to mush?
Oh, I did.
What do people do? Does anybody do that?
Yeah.
I say hire.
Like, what they do, they get on, like the UP 200 has a chat site. And people will post on there, I need a driver for my truck from here to there,
kind of a thing.
And volunteers will drive it.
Right. Or volunteers will get into
line. Yep, absolutely. Complete stranger.
Come drive my truck. Please make sure it's there and don't, leave the state.
When we went to Grand Portage, that race was the first time we met Marcel Drouin, who is from Quebec. And he asked my dad, because there were a couple of us, would you drive my truck from here to the finish? And my dad said, sure, no problem. Well, Marcel had no idea. My dad is blind. He can't. I mean, we maybe obviously got his truck there. Dad didn't drive it. But, yeah, you just ask. There's so many volunteers.
So he showed up to a race looking for help.
Yeah, he came from
Quebec.
Who's
going to help me?
And just planned on somebody being there to help him.
The strength of the...
Which there's always people there. Yeah.
So
there's volunteers.
It's a pretty common thing then.
Very common thing.
So what advice would you give us before we end this? What advice would you give us or to anybody out there mushing? Your thoughts of getting into it, enjoy it, jump deep into it, cut back, take your time.
You know, I always tell people I would never encourage anyone to do this because it is so life consuming, but anybody that wants to do it, absolutely do it, and do it 100%. Just do it as much as you can financially do for as long as you can do it. I have my first dogs. They're all still there. Okay. You know, they're 14, 15, 16 years old, but that's a choice that we've made to keep them there. We still have a run of dogs, and then they just run and do whatever.
Right.
Mostly sleep. But definitely get as much information as you can, more than I did. There's so many things out there. I've never met a musher that would deny somebody if they asked him a question. You know, some people are more shy and they come across as being not as open. It's just a matter of talking to them.
Awesome.
And there's definitely a difference between the sprint races and the longer races. But in the longer races, you're out on the trail with people a little longer. You know them a little more. The sprint races, you spend more time not during the race,
afterwards.
Mingling before and after. So it is a different atmosphere. The people are a little bit different, but very fun.
So you've made $250,000 so far on all the races.
That's what I paid, yeah.
No, I'm sorry. Wait,
that's what I paid.
Yeah, it's definitely consuming.
It is, but I wouldn't trade any of it. And when it gets to the point that it's not any fun anymore, when we don't enjoy it, when Sydney doesn't enjoy it, or we can't afford to do it the way that we believe that we want to do it, then it's time to stop.
Then
but we're not at that point.
Give all the dogs to Mike and make him take care of it.
Well, yeah. And see, at this point, Sydney got her own sled last year. So we might be in it for a little while, yeah.
Oh, go back to sprint races.
I know.
Well, good. Then we'll be racing together.
It'd be so different. So different.
Wow, what a great interview, huh, Jean?
Yeah, that was really neat. I learned most because I'm actually going to start racing five-dog team from three dogs this year. And it really, as I was listening and we were asking questions, I'm thinking, okay, I can do this.
Big time.
Now that we have enough dogs, actually, though, even though we're adding one more racer to our family this year because she turned 10, we had got enough dogs where I could do a five-dog versus just the three-dog. So.
Yeah, but I still don't think we have enough dogs, so I think I'm still going to be ski jarring. But,
yep.
Hey, yep. It's all for the kids anyways. Hey, you know what's interesting, too, is I just want to give you one bit of advice, Gina, that if you're out on the trail and you're doing well and you're racing hard and you know nobody's passing you and that kind of stuff, and you come upon a whole bunch of people standing around and having a party, don't stop.
Why? You get donuts.
Yeah, exactly. I absolutely love it.
You're like cold and you're thirsty and they're offering donuts.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm thinking, okay.
I am so appreciative of Becky's humor. She has helped us out so much with getting into the sport. Not only has she sewn into us a bunch of dogs, which are just absolutely our favorite and most...
Oh, don't say that. They might hear.
Yeah, there you go. They're wonderful dogs. All our dogs are wonderful. She has just been a huge friend, has totally mentored us and got us into the sport, given us advice, allowed me to call and bug him on how long should this chain be or how long should this, you know, neckline be and how long to do this and do that. And she has just been a plethora of information for us. So now let's jump to our interview with Dr. Tim Hunt. Hey, Dr. Tim, why don't you tell us this week about old dog care?
Sure. We're all faced with the consequences of having dogs in our yard, and they get older. You know, they might reach 8 or 9, 10 years of age. Might not be race worthy anymore because of injuries or just time, and they're not able to keep up with the other dogs. What's that mean we do with them? I think we need to do stuff with them to keep them active. If they're just sitting on a chain, they're going to age real quick. If you have a paddock or some sort of an enclosure where they can run off the leash, they're still staying active, keeps their mind active, which I think is huge. And free running them like that really helps smooth out any creaks and crannies that they might have from old injuries. Just letting them get off the chain and being able to stretch it out. So I think getting them free run is huge with these older dogs versus the younger dogs. I think it's beneficial for everyone, but the older dogs especially. Number two, I don't see anything wrong with using glucosamine supplements and such. There's a lot of good products out there that can actually benefit these guys. You have to buy and supplement it separately. The amount in dog foods is never enough to actually benefit them to any great degree. So if you're going to use it right, use enough according to the label. and use the dog products. I think those are a little bit better than using human products in that they're just formulated a little bit differently. Thirdly, I really think that you need to stay on a high-protein diet for these older guys. I think it's healthier for them, especially the raw meat diets. I think you should stay with, you know, the higher-protein raw meat. Don't try to skimp too much on that. I think the high-protein meat kind of diets are real good for their systems. These guys that live out in the dog years don't get sick very often. They rarely get sick. They live to be old. Often, I think it has to do with them being able to camp. They're always outside getting exposed to the elements. Their immune systems are pretty strong. Be aware of what's going on. If you're not running your older dogs as much, you still got to touch them and feel them to make sure their weight's okay. Key with, you know, weight management with dogs is actually to feel over their ribs instead of just looking at them, because those fur coats can fool you into either they're too chubby or too thin. And then you can find lumps or bumps on their skin or otherwise that might alert you to taking them to the vet, have them checked further. But get them out, you know, do stuff with them. Don't forget them entirely and put them in the back of the lot. I think if you can't do that, you need to look around to see what else you can do with your animals to find a home for it. We find homes for our dogs when they retire. In some instances, a lot of our dogs will go to the end of the line in our dog yard. But if you can find a place where a little girl needs a couple of dogs to run a rec team, and these dogs are just in seventh heaven by going to somewhere, they're running 4 miles a couple times a week and getting all this loving from some little girl. So if you can do that, I think that's a great way for a sled dog to kind of finish out their athletic careers. Other than that, I think a lot of the care with these older guys tends to be very similar to what you would do with the younger ones in the dog yard. They need attention, they need good quality food, and I think you need to get them off the chains and let them run loose. It really helps them out that way, both in their psyche and also with, you know, just stretching them out.
That is great. I guess, is there anything that you notice most that you'd say this is why we would retire a dog, or is it just based on their pains and different...
I think dogs get retired out of teams for several reasons. One, the people can't bring the dogs to their potential, and they might get retired out early. I think if you're able to spend enough time with dogs, you can make a dog that's so-so into a very good dog instead of having 100 dogs and just selecting the cream of the crop. So I think spending time with the dogs can make a difference with when you retire them out. Number two, these guys will retire out because they can't keep up with the speed of the main team anymore. Suddenly at 8 or 9 years of age, you know, they're a step behind the younger ones, and that's just pushing them too much. And then they're going to be more prone for injuries. And then you have the injuries that can crop up as arthritic changes when they're older, too. That can sure happen to, you know, a dog that might have got seriously hurt when she was 3 or 4, and then when she's 7 or 8, their arthritis starts to show up. So to me, I guess those are the three reasons why they might be pulled out, you know, from a main training group. But there's a lot of recreational teams out there that can use these good dogs, and take your time and try to find someone who can find a home for a good old buddy and then give another 5 or 6 years under the guidance of a kid. I think that's the best way to go.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Another great interview with Dr. Tim. Dr. Tim, thank you so much. And don't forget, everybody, Dr. Tim does not only great work for the whole sport of dog sledding, he also provides a great quality, high-energy nutrition for dogs. So go out to his website, www.drtims.com, and check out the Momentum and Pursuit dog food.
Yep.
So I want to say thank you to everybody. Don't forget to go out to SledDogPodcast.com. Give us some feedback. Just click on the comments button right below the screen of each one of the interviews on Martin's or Dee Dee's or Becky's or any of the interviews. Drop a note on there for Tim Hunt, and we'll make sure that he gets it if you want. But we just totally thank all of you for giving us not only feedback, but giving us the inspiration to keep doing it. So thank you so much.
Also, if you notice that Amazon link kind of flashing on and off on there, if you actually go to our site, then go to Amazon, we'll get a kickback. So Amazon isn't paying us money to put their logo on our site. They'll only give us some money back if you actually buy through our site.
And I think it's about a half of 1%. So,
I know. It's boy, a whole it's lot nice. Of money. But
if you're going to buy from Amazon,
yeah, if you're going to do it and you use our site, we would greatly appreciate it, especially as Christmas is coming upon us. Great way to do gift certificates.
You know, it's amazing. We spent the day yesterday at a rig training, and it was kind of back and forth on who's on the internet, who's not on the internet. Are mushers on the internet yet? You know, I think a lot of them are, a lot of them aren't. So what we did is we passed out a bunch of CDs to get people interested and to show them about what Sled Dog Podcast is. But I ask you guys, if you get a chance, tell a friend. Let them know a little bit about the Sled Dog Podcast and what we're all about. Again, not trying to make money, just trying to make a lot of friends and hopefully share some stories in the world of mushing with all of you.
Especially the Shoney stories with children. If little kids are interested at all in the Iditarod or dog sledding, they'll learn a lot from Shoney and how to dog sled.
And so that nobody thinks that was me, that was our lab on the floor making a nice little growling noise. Hey, well, thank you so much, everybody. Until next time, happy mushing.
Be blessed, all of you.